Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Clay Travis is still in L.A. for one more day. This lengthy celebration, Clay, for Lock It In Season 1, which comes to an end. Look, a lot of shows don't get a second season. So I said this kind of flippantly last night, just got one word in and said congratulations. But you guys have done 180 shows, and you should be proud of that. That's pretty damn impressive, honestly.
Yeah, well, look, we had a lot of fun. I've been out here now for 10 days. I'm flying back basically as soon as I finish the show this morning. I got an early morning flight to come back to Nashville. I'll be back in my usual Nashville studio on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But I've had an incredible time out in L.A. I mean, the double earthquakes, Kawhi with the metaphorical earthquake and his decision to go join the Clippers. And we closed out the show yesterday for season one. Now, we'll be back in August. But for people who don't like me, I took about 30 pies in the face live on television yesterday for being the worst gambler in the season. If you haven't watched our show, we have a really, really fun time, whether it is me, Cousin Sal, Rachel Bonetta, or Todd Furman. And we will all be back in August. We don't know the exact return date. But I got a little bit nervous, I'm going to be honest with you, when I came onto the lot yesterday morning early to get ready for the show. And we have a, for people who live out in L.A., if you drive by the outside of the Fox lot at the intersection of Pico and Motor, we have a, there was a billboard with our pictures on it. And early, I got an email and a text message from somebody inside, and also then Sal took a picture of it, our billboard coming down. So you would think that at the Fox Studios, they could have been like, hey, let's give these guys one more day of you know, their shine, letting them have their billboard photo that is up there. Instead, on the day that we finished season one, they decided they couldn't leave it up for one more day, so they took down our billboard, and I think Cowherd got a new billboard up, because God knows we definitely have to continue to promote the herd. And if he didn't have the whole day Monday, if he had to start on Tuesday, nobody would have had any idea about his show. And obviously, I'm joking about that, but it was an awesome run. I mean, 180 shows, a lot of shows. It's 180 hours of television. And a lot of people who listen to this radio show have been watching and spending their time with it. And so it's just been a lot of fun. Maybe not as fun as the home run derby or the slam dunk contest, depending. We're going to have a little bit of a debate here to start off the show. We got a loaded Tuesday show for you. Going to talk with Alex Marvez. Going to talk with John Morosi, getting you ready. And then in hour three, you're going to continue to hang out with us, because Petros was not able to get up with us on this Tuesday morning, so he's going to join us on Wednesday instead. So that's kind of giving everybody a roadmap of where we're headed over the next 3 hours. But it was an awful lot of fun, and I really do enjoy the time that I get to spend in L.A. I have spent a lot of days, weeks, and months over the years, last 6 years with Fox Sports, doing a variety of different things, and the Lock It In television show is about as much fun as I've had on the lot, and I've had a lot of fun. And so that's exciting to think about, the fact that we're going to get season two, and hopefully, obviously, we got a lot of years left in the radio show and everything else, but getting to do radio and television is really you know, kind of a dream come true for what I would have hoped to be able to do one day. And so honestly, I kind of love every minute of my day, except the part where my alarm goes off super early in the morning, because for a couple minutes there I definitely think, what in the world are you doing? But once the show gets rolling, I definitely think I've made the right decision.
So Vlad Guerrero and Jock Peterson put on a show last night in the second round of the Home Run Derby, 40-39. Vlad goes up there, hits 29 in 4 minutes, then gets a 30-second bonus time because he hit two of them more than 440 feet. Jock Peterson did the exact same thing. He hit 29, hit two more than 440, and then they got a one-minute tiebreaker, and both of them hit eight more. And then even at 37, they had a three-swing playoff. both hit one more each. Peterson pulled his last one foul. It went out, but it went just foul. And then finally, Guerrero wins 40-39. That kind of felt like France and the U.S. and U.S. women's national team, because it felt like it was over right there. But of course it was not, and you could predict what was going to happen. Pete Alonso, another rookie, a Mets rookie, he's able to hit 23 because Vlad's just worn out. Vlad hit 91 home runs in the home run derby last night. Vlad Jr. did. His father, I'm not sure his father hit 91 in his entire career, and Vlad Guerrero was a great player. But the home run derby happens. It's a thing. And I'm sitting here wondering, and you mentioned it just now, Clay, home run derby versus slam dunk contest. These are two events that they're kind of the marquee, even though the three-point shootout has become bigger in the NBA just because the three-point shot has become so prevalent in the NBA. But these are kind of the signature all-star skills competition, the pride moments that you see out there. And look, a lot of times it can be fun to watch. So of the two of these, which one of them do you think works better?
Man, old school wise, and I'm old enough to remember, you know, the Jordan, the Dominique Wilkins, the Spud Webb era NBA slam dunk contest. I think that is the best thing that has ever happened in terms of a skills competition. And, you know, the D. Brown, Pump It Up, the Cedric Ceballos with these, I'm going old school.
Blindfolding right there.
Yeah, the blindfold on. All of those things I remember watching live as a kid and thinking this is the greatest thing that's ever existed in mankind. But I feel like the dominance of the slam dunk contest, we've kind of seen everything happen at this point in time, right? I guess it was Blake Griffin dunking over the Kia, if I remember
that
correctly.
That was so not impressive, too. Like, it was not that high a jump to make.
Yeah, you know, like, at some point, you've just kind of seen everything. And so the showmanship element of the slam dunk contest has kind of given up the ghost, I would say. And I think the home run derby is actually the better and more superior event to watch. Now, was it last year we saw Bryce Harper just kind of go off? And I thought that was riveting, must-see television. If I had to choose between the slam dunk contest or the home run derby, I think the home run derby is better television because I have more uncertainty about what might happen from moment to moment. Every year you got a new stadium, which adds a little bit of new dynamics. You got new guys who are swinging for the fences, which obviously adds complexity. And I just think there's more excitement level from the home run derby now than there is the slam dunk contest. You with me or against me?
I'm with you. I think the one angle of this that I continue to think about is which one of these things matters after the fact. And I don't know that either one of them does anymore because, I mean, look, I'm a Western Kentucky grad and Jeremy Evans won the thing. But I know that because I'm a Western Kentucky grad. But I look at the home run derby and I think, do I care about baseball because of this event? The answer is no. The sport surrounding the home run derby is nowhere near as interesting to me in 2019 as the sport surrounding the slam dunk contest. So the slam dunk contest maybe isn't as essential because last night, baseball kind of mattered. People on social media were talking about baseball. Unless you've got Cubs Indians, which, you know, we were privileged in our first year on the air to have that as the World Series to be able to talk about, and that was fascinating. But that's generally not going to be the case. And so I look at the time we live in and the condition of those two sports, and I say the slam dunk contest is nowhere near as important to its sport anymore, I don't think, as the home run derby. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think it used to be, and this may be a function of there not being as much on television back when we were kids. If you're out there listening to me right now and you remember Jordan and you remember Spud Webb and you remember Dominique Wilkins and you remember D. Brown and Ced Ceballos and
Even Vince Carter
and the Blake Griffin over the Kias, like all of that is kind of old school in the sense that there weren't that many other events that were actually taking place. And nowadays, I think that there are so many games to be watched. It used to be that, like, the All-Star game was a big deal because it was an opportunity to watch all these people, for instance, in the world of the NBA and in the world of baseball that you might have heard about, but you didn't really know, right? Like, I'm old enough to remember when you would get a newspaper and you would look at the box score and you would know these names based on the numbers they were putting up in the box score, but other than maybe a little bit of highlights, you hadn't actually seen them play. And so it used to be the Major League Baseball All-Star Game was that opportunity to kind of see the entire league outside of your regional area, wherever you watched your favorite guy play. And now I feel like we kind of have a better sense for how all these guys are going to perform. And I feel like, to their credit, Major League Baseball has done a better job of getting their superstars in the Home Run Derby than the dunk contest has of getting the favorites in the dunk contest. Because it's almost like if you are LeBron, who I think has never appeared in the dunk contest, if I'm correct, all you have to do is lose, right? Because the expectation is, oh, LeBron's different level. If he goes out and he loses to some no-name, then it elevates the no-name, but it doesn't necessarily elevate LeBron. And it used to be in the NBA that the best players were there. I mean, when Jordan and Dominique Wilkins were going head-to-head for the dunk contest, I mean, those were two of the best players in the entire NBA. Major League Baseball, maybe it's because of the prize that they're putting to bear out there, they do a better job, I think, of getting their stars to actually perform in the Home Run Derby than the NBA does of getting their stars to be in the slam dunk contest.
Yeah, I think that that's true. I also think that a lot of the NBA stars feel like they have a lot to lose if they go out there and get embarrassed. And I feel like LeBron has been afraid to be in the dunk contest, which is kind of crazy. Now, if I were him, I would not do it. But the thing about LeBron is, I've never seen LeBron do the kind of dunks I used to see on N1 mixtapes, or stuff that I see Jordan Kilgannon doing right now in other dunk contests outside of the NBA. Like, LeBron James is a great in-game dunker, but he wasn't like a stylistic dunker at any point. It's all about his power. So I can understand why he wouldn't want to go out there, because what does he really have to gain if there's all these, I don't know, dudes that are cutting 360s and 720s out there trying to do all of this stuff?
Well, I think you're right. I think it cuts him down. If you're King James and you lose anything, it definitely is an attack upon your throne. Having said that, I don't think Michael Jordan would have ever become Air Jordan if the slam dunk contest doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's right. There's no question that that's right. Another thing that I'll say, and then we'll get to break here. You were talking about the stat lines in newspapers. The other thing, and we've mentioned this on this program before, baseball cards and what they used to mean. And
oh, I was in love with them.
Yeah, we all were. Tops, Fleer, Upper Deck, when the first year of Upper Deck came out. But I
Show
knew
some respect for Donruss.
Yes, yeah, I totally left out Donruss in that entire deal. But I mean, I remember what the old Tops looked like with the wood grain.
Oh yeah,
that one year,
1987.
Yes, I mean, it was just absolutely outstanding. And the other thing I think was there was no interleague play, so when the Detroit Tigers would be on TV nationally,
point.
It's like, who are what sorcery is this? Is this Major League Baseball? Because you got used to watching a few teams. So I think all of that probably stands out.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
First half of the Major League Baseball season is in the books. We're getting ready for the All-Star game tonight. John Morosi, our Major League Baseball insider, our expert, joins us now. John, let's start off with kind of some breakdowns of the first half of the Major League Baseball season. And I think when you start with what you saw in the first half of the season and maybe where the storylines are, you got to start with the Dodgers. Who have just been playing lights out baseball in the first half of this season. Are they the best team in baseball as we go to the break?
Clay, they're the best team in baseball by record right now. Of course, they did lose three straight to close the first half. It's interesting. Right now, they are the best team. However, I look at the Yankees, and the Yankees now have the best record in the American League and are barely behind where the Dodgers are right now in terms of overall record. And with the Yankees, as you look at their club and the fact that I believe they'll get healthier as the year goes on and probably get even better by improving just internally once more of their players are back healthy and contributing, most especially Giancarlo Stanton and Dylan Betances as well. This team, I think the Yankees eventually will be the best team. And we know, of course, both teams are likely to make some upgrades here at the trade deadline, which, by the way, is only one uniform trade deadline this year on July 31st, which I think really will add a lot of intrigue to the coming weeks and the trade deadline. But in general, I think right now, Clay, you're right, the Dodgers are the best team in baseball in the first half, but they have some flaws. That the bullpen is not quite as deep as we have seen in the past with Kenley Jansen. Again, his dominance has waned a little bit here in the last year or so. So I would say the Dodgers right now, yes, the best team, but I see the Yankees as gaining ground rapidly, and I believe that they have a very good chance to pass up the Dodgers in due time as well.
One of the biggest surprises as well has been the young Atlanta Braves and just how impressive they have been early part of this season. They've opened up a 6-game lead in the NL East. Is that going to hold in your mind? Do you think the Braves, maybe a little bit ahead of expectations, are going to be in the playoffs again?
I think they will. They've got the best run differential in that division. In fact, the best run differential of any NL team besides the Dodgers, which is really, at this point in time, a pretty good gauge of how well they're playing in general. The Phillies have disappointed in some ways in Bryce Harper's first season there. We thought for a while that they might have been the best team, but they have faded a bit since an impressive start. I think the Braves as well, Clay, they've got a very good farm system to pull from and make some moves potentially to shore up their bullpen and their rotation. I think to me it's very telling that in that division, with all their flaws, and they don't have a lot of flaws, but I think they've got a pretty gaping hole in terms of their rotation and also in their bullpen to add in a bit more experience there. Despite those two pretty apparent weaknesses, they do have that 6-game lead that you mentioned, which is certainly an affirmation on the Braves' part, but also maybe a bit of a damning bit of criticism for the teams behind them, the Nationals and the Phillies. So I would look for the Braves to utilize some of their young pitching in the minor leagues to maybe make some bold moves here in the coming weeks. Alex Anthopoulos, their GM, is known for aggressive trading. Going back to his time with the Toronto Blue Jays, of course, he made the David Price deal 4 years ago. So I would expect that we'll see the Braves make a big move, and I think that will, to me, solidify their place as the best team in the National League East and probably, Clay, the toughest challenger to the Dodgers and anywhere in the National League.
The NL Central is an absolute mess, right? And I mean that if you're an NL Central fan, if you're a fan of the Cubs, the Brewers, the Cardinals, the Pirates, or the Reds, you're sitting around saying, hey, maybe we could win this division. All of the teams in that division within 4.5 of the lead, roughly, as we head into the All-Star break. Who's going to win the NL Central, and is it good or bad to have a whole lot of mediocrity in the same division?
Well, Clay, here's one point on the NL Central that I think is fascinating, and I wish I could remember who said it first, because I think it's just really one of the salient points about baseball right now, is the spread between first place and last place in the Central in the National League is actually smaller than the spread between first and second in any division. So
yeah, it's
first
wild.
And last 4.5 games in the NL Central, that is smaller than anybody else's lead there at first to second place. So remarkable how compact those teams are. I expect that in time that the Brewers are going to be the best team there. I think they are the team with the least amount of flaws and also the one with the best close to the majors farm system to make some pretty aggressive moves. I think Madison Bumgarner probably is the best fit there of anybody as a rental piece to help them get over the top. But they're a team that I think has struggled to meet the expectations that they set by the way they played last year. They are, I believe, Clay, a move or two away from being able to credibly challenge the Dodgers or even the Braves, for that matter, in the National League playoffs. but I look at them as having the fewest number of flaws. The Cubs right now, they have really had some system breakdowns, both offensively and on the mound in the last month or so, that give me really some significant concerns there with that team there in the National League Central. So I think in general, I would say the Brewers are the team that have the fewest flaws, but to your point, Clay, it's almost by default. And I would say this, the Cincinnati Reds, I've had people that follow that division closely that say, you know what, the Reds might have the best chance of any to be able to win this division and have a good run in the second half. So because their pitching is so good, Luis Castillo, an all-star, is a name that we should all know. He's been really impressive in the first half of the season. So do not sleep. I know the Reds are in last place, but they're one last place team with a credible chance of making the playoffs.
All right, we're talking to John Morosi. You can follow him on Twitter at JonMorosi is where you can find him. We're talking about Major League Baseball at the halfway point All-Star game on Fox tonight from Cleveland. Let's go into the AL a little bit. You touched on them earlier, the Yankees. Do you think that the Boston Red Sox can get things rolling? Do you think that Tampa Bay can hang around? Both those teams pretty substantially far back, or do you think this is the Yankees division?
This is the Yankees division, Clay. I would be stunned if by the end of the season that the Yankees are not in first place in this division. They are, I believe, the best team, deepest lineup, deepest bullpen. The rotation, even though they've had some setbacks with Herman being hurt, now he has come back, though Severino has not even been able to pitch yet in the regular season. So they've had a number of bits of adversity there with their rotation, but they've been able to weather that because Tanaka's been solid. Sabathia, my goodness, you wonder if he would almost reconsider retirement at this point in time. He won't, by the way, but he's pitched well enough to make you wonder if he would. That's been a really nice development for them. Their lineup has been so versatile and adaptable. DJ LeMahieu, an all-star. He, in so many ways, has been their MVP of the first half. And Aaron Judge, now he's been able to come back and make an impact. It's remarkable, Clay, but it just speaks to the overall depth of this team that Stanton has basically played not at all this whole year, and they have offensively barely missed him, if at all. It's a remarkable story. Brian Cashman deserves a lot of credit for just the overall depth that he has built with that organization, even having an injury of late here to Luke Voit, and they've still managed to find ways to win ball games. So I've been very impressed by them. The Rays, I think that they'll find a way to be a wild card team. I'm not so sure about the Red Sox. They have, I believe, a number of weaknesses there with their bullpen. A lot of concerns there. I think rotation depth also an issue there for Boston. And they have spent so much money, Clay, and so many prospects in recent years that their resources to make a big deal here at the deadline are minimal. So they almost are the finished product that they're going to be already with respect to the deadline, which makes me concerned because you could see some teams like the Indians, the Rangers, make themselves better and potentially crowd out the defending World Series champion Red Sox from a wild card spot in the AL this year.
We talked about the Braves being the best surprise, I would say, in the National League in terms of teams that have come out and played outstandingly well. I think the Minnesota Twins would have to be that team in the AL. They have a pretty decent lead. They've been white hot. They've come back down to earth a little bit, I guess, in recent history. Do you think the Twins have staying power?
I do, especially in that division, Clay. You know, I look at the Indians, and the Indians are a good team. They're no longer a great team. They've been a great team in the past. They were a great team, I think, as recently as 2016 when they reached the World Series and came within a swing of winning it. But they're a solid team that I don't believe is going to challenge the Twins. The Twins' offense is incredible. They are going to set, I believe, records, runs scored, home runs. All of those are within their reach as a ball club this year, and I expect that's not going to slow down. They are deep in the lineup. They already had a very good lineup last year, and they added the likes of Nelson Cruz and Jonathan Scope and Marwin Gonzalez and CJ Cron to that group, and you see continued growth from the likes of Jorge Polanco and Max Kepler and Eddie Rosario. So, yes, some injuries of late for them with their lineup, but I look for them to be able to slug their way to a division title. The question, of course, is going to come, how do they handle the Astros if they play them in the first round? And Houston, we believe they'll get healthier with Carlos Correa in the second half. So I think in general, we'll see the Astros be a very formidable team once they meet the Twins in the playoffs. But I think the Twins have a very clear path, in my estimation, to winning the AL Central this year.
We're talking to John Morosi. It's the halfway point, Major League Baseball, the All-Star game tonight. All right. And then finally, going through every one of these divisions, the Houston Astros have obviously been on a roll for a couple of years now. Do you think they kind of coast through in the AL West winning their division?
Well, I think they probably will win the division, Clay, but I think the important thing to watch with the Astros here in the coming weeks is they've got to make a move to fortify their rotation. Right now, they've got three solid starters, solid to very good starters, of course, with both Verlander and Cole being all-stars. Wade Miley, a very solid three or four starter. But they're not going to be able to beat the Yankees, I believe, or the Dodgers unless they make a big move. And they might as well make a move, Clay, that helps improve their club for next year as well with someone like a Noah Syndergaard, a Marcus Stroman, a Matthew Boyd. Because after this year, Gerrit Cole is a free agent, probably going to be the highest rated pitching free agent anywhere, which means he'll be really demanding a high price tag, and I believe pricing himself out of the Houston market right now. I think he'll be a free agent and probably go somewhere else. Colin McHugh is a free agent. They've got a lot of guys that are going to be entering free agency that will make, Miley is one more name, by the way, that will, I think, create a lot of uncertainty for that rotation entering next year. I think their lineup will allow them to continue to compete for a number of years to come, but barring some pretty significant pitching moves, that next wave of pitching that they thought they had with the likes of Forrest Whitley and Corbin Martin has not materialized for the Astros in a way that they expected, and so I think as a result, they are not protected well at the top levels of their farm system, and unless they make some moves here pretty soon, I think they're certainly fine for 2019 to win the division, but I wonder significantly if they're going to be able to be a World Series contender legitimately this year and next year as well.
We're talking to my guy John Morosi. He's Major League Baseball's insider for this show and many other shows. You can follow him on Twitter at JonMorosi. We have the All-Star game tonight. For a lot of people out there, they may not have been paying that much attention to Major League Baseball so far, but I know a lot of my audience, this time of year in particular, you're looking for your sports fix. What would you tell people to watch in tonight's All-Star game if they are, which I think is very common, a casual baseball fan just looking for something to be entertained by tonight?
Well, we see, I think, in Mike Trout, he's got a great track record, Clay, of being a dynamic player, certainly in this game. He has been on this big stage before. He's won the MVP of this game before, multiple times, in fact. And I think it's important for us to point out and appreciate, as Tom Verducci did on our broadcast over the weekend of the Angels and Astros, that Mike Trout's numbers through this point in his career basically suggest he is on par with Griffey, with Mantle, with Mays. He is of that ilk in terms of the all-time great center fielders of this point in time in his career. It's remarkable to say it, but it's true. Appreciate the greatness that we see in front of us. I think great moments, CC Sabathia getting a great ovation back in Cleveland. Stay tuned for that. Michael Brantley, as revered as anybody, has been with that franchise in Cleveland for a very, very long time. He, of course, now a Houston Astro. He'll get a huge ovation. I think Cody Bellinger in the National League, there's so much great young talent on the NL side. Bellinger, Nolan Arenado. I look for big moments from those guys to really seize that opportunity. I really credit, Clay, the way that this young group of players, in conjunction with MLB and the Players Union, they get the importance of being relatable and fun. And you see it a lot with social media during the course of the All-Star game. They get it. And I realize that baseball sometimes doesn't have that same place at the bar stool conversation of American sports as it was in the past, the great debates that you see that we maybe have about football and basketball. But the players are doing their part. They get it. The league gets it. The union gets it as well. I give a lot of credit to all of them. And I would just say, if you're only a casual fan of baseball, sit back, enjoy, let the young stars of the game today tell you their story, because it's a great story and we've got great people to tell it as well with the young stars of the game today.
Outstanding stuff as always, John Morosi.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com.
And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
On Monday, we spent so much time talking about Kawhi Leonard and Paul George to the Clippers that we really didn't unpack what I think is an incredibly interesting storyline, and that is the outcome of the Women's World Cup. And in conjunction with that, what we saw in the Gold Cup match between the United States and Mexico, it was interesting because if you are a soccer fan, you had the opportunity to sit down on Sunday and start off your morning watching the U.S. women and then follow it up by watching the U.S. men play. And a lot of people out there, you know, their natural reaction, and I think it's an intriguing one, is to kind of compare the relative status of the U.S. men's national team and the women's team. I'm going to start with this. That's really kind of a fool's errand, right? Our women dominate because our women have global rights that do not exist for many women in the rest of the world. The Women's World Cup is only 24 teams. They're talking about expanding it to make it 32, but they've only recently expanded it from beyond 16. The reason why our women dominate relative to other women in the world is because the United States is an insanely wealthy country, and because we are able to give our women opportunities and assets that frankly don't exist anywhere else, because we have the resources and the money for a lot of American families to pay thousands of dollars a year for women's travel soccer when a lot of places in the rest of the world don't even have the resources to get their daughters into school, period. So the men, by and large, worldwide, the best talent is able to be found for men's sports because there's a lot more money in it. And so the other part of this, as opposed to looking at the overall status of the men and the women, is trying to assess the relative quality of play of the men and the women. And the thing that I would say about this, and then the quality of play also ties in with pay. And there's I know that when the women won, there was a lot of chants about equal pay and everything else. Well, I don't know why there's not more time spent on analysis of the market factors. Let me give you an example. Nobody out there who is a fan of the NBA is arguing that WNBA players should be receiving the same pay as men, right? Because there are a lot more people who care about men's basketball than women's basketball. Worldwide, most of the money that teams receive to play in the World Cup come as a part of this breakdown, right? The FIFA dollars that are brought to bear are distributed to all the different teams. So, the reason why the men make more money than the women is because the men's World Cup produces orders of magnitude more. The most recent number that I saw, and it may be different for this year because certainly the overall interest for the Women's World Cup is increasing, and that's great for the sport overall. The most recent number I saw was that the Men's World Cup produces in the neighborhood of $4 billion a year. In revenue when they're doing the World Cup every 4 years, $4 billion, and that the Women's World Cup had produced around $80 million, and that the women were actually receiving a higher percentage of the revenue that was produced by the Women's World Cup for winning a title than the men were. I think the women were receiving 13% of the revenue in terms of championship money and payment, and the men were receiving around 9%. Now, the Men's World Cup produces an awful lot more revenue, and they're talking about expanding it as well. So one of the big issues here is that we are talking about a global sport, and the way the globe values men's soccer as opposed to women's soccer is completely different. If anything, I hate to see people immediately latch on to this idea of unfairness and people being upset about it, because if anything, our women are the global standard by which women's rights should be brought to bear everywhere. And if you've heard me talking about on this show, a lot of times in the Women's World Cup, you can just look at the overall freedom that women have in their countries as a rough approximation of whether or not that team's going to win. Because, and we had this discussion, in Iran, women were just allowed last year to actually be able to attend soccer matches in the country. The women who play on the Iranian soccer team have to wear pants and they have to wear hijabs where only their eyes are visible as members of their team. is it a surprise that when you consider those overall lack of rights, that the U.S. women would be able to dominate against very many countries because we just have rights that they don't? I also, this is a larger issue. I also think this whole equal pay for equal work argument, when you actually look at the numbers on a global scale for all jobs, doesn't actually shake out. And we got a presidential election going on. And I think this ties in with it because certainly the U.S. women's soccer team has been intensely politicized during the course of this run to their championship. In fact, I think that the U.S. women's team has accepted an invite to visit the House of Representatives and AOC there, but they're not going to accept an invite to go visit Donald Trump because they have a difference of opinion on politics. We can get into all of the aspects of that, but the equal pay for equal work argument doesn't actually break down in the United States either. When people say, oh, women make 80 cents on the dollar compared to men, that's not true. When you actually consider the amount of years that people have been working on jobs, the reason why women make less money than men a lot of times is because women take years off to have children very often in our country. And if you want to argue that means we need better child care, look, I'll 100% sign on with I would like a lot better childcare options, because I know when I had my wife working full time and I was working full time, we spent more money on childcare to have my young kids in childcare than we would have to have them enrolled in a state college, right? Like my kids, where we live in Nashville, Tennessee, my kids could have gone to the University of Tennessee in college and paid tuition cheaper than they were getting childcare. So, like, I don't even worry about the cost of college now because I've had to live through the cost of childcare. And there's a lot of you out there talking about that too. But if you think about it from a pure business perspective, if women were really making 80 cents on the dollar for the exact same work, then the truth of the matter is every company would only hire women because they'd have 20% reduced expenses when it comes to paying employees. So it's just not true. Do I wish that the women made the exact same amount as the men? Yes. Are our women better in the world than our men are at soccer? Yes. Now, don't be crazy. There's a certain segment of the population out there that's like, oh, our women would beat our men. Don't be insane. All right. The U.S. women, as good as they are, got beaten by an under 15 all-star team in Dallas, Texas, a couple of years ago, 5-2 in a scrimmage. So and as good as they are, our U.S. men would be. I'll ask Furman about this. We talked about this on the show yesterday. I said, hey, how much would the U.S. men be favored over the U.S. women? And he's like, oh, it's a massive difference in the overall talent. It's not similar at all. And so I think that has to be factored in many respects. But in general, this argument for equal pay for equal work and everything else that's affiliated with it, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And by the way, I actually think the U.S. men are on a good trajectory. They lost 1-0 on Sunday night in the Gold Cup, but I thought they played pretty doggone well overall. And it may be, especially with Christian Pulisic, I always mispronounce his name. At some point, I'm going to get his name right. But I think it's possible that he is going to one day be the best player overall in American history that we have ever seen. So I think that, and that's a high bar to put to bear on him, but I think he has the potential to really take American soccer to another level because he has a talent that I'm not sure we've ever seen before, and he's still an insanely young guy. But I think it's unfortunate when we get into situations like this, and look, I wish the women made the same amount of money as the men, but most of the money is not coming from the United States that the men and the women receive. It's from the World Cup, and the men's World Cup is infinitely more valuable than the women's World Cup, and that's how we end up in a situation where there is that disconnect between their respective salaries. Now, one day I hope we can celebrate, by the way, the men being anywhere near as good as the women, too. And I do think we're starting to improve a little bit, but the world competition for men's soccer is just infinitely higher than the competition level is for women. In soccer.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We talked a lot in Monday's show, and we've talked about it a little bit in today's show, but still the lasting after effects and aftershocks of Kawhi to the Clippers. I think the NBA got insanely fortunate. I think if Adam Silver had had a magic wand, as Kawhi watch continued over the course of all last week, if Kawhi Leonard goes to the Lakers, then we have another dynastic team. And certainly the people who like LeBron and hate LeBron are still going to have a reason to like or hate LeBron. But to me, the way that this is set up now, you are creating an opportunity for Kawhi and LeBron to be potentially the two best players in the NBA next year, playing in the same city, which happens to be the second biggest city in the entire United States, that has a rabid fan base, and it is incredibly beneficial, I think, to the league. I think that if Adam Silver had had the ability to send Kawhi Leonard anywhere in free agency to the Clippers with Paul George is the best possible result for the NBA in terms of interest. Because again, the LeBron people, whether you love or hate LeBron, you're still going to be paying attention to the Lakers. But to make the Clippers a rival in their own building, to set up Kawhi as kind of the anti-LeBron, he's not the guy sending out tweets all the time. He's not the guy sending out Instagram messages. He's not active on social media. He is the quiet storm, to steal a line that I used on Monday's show. And LeBron is sort of the frenetic energy of the heartbeat of the league that's always providing a brand new storyline. Are you with me that this is incredible? This is basically the best thing that could happen from Adam Silver's perspective?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, him going to the Lakers would have made the Lakers interesting, and that's about it. Him going in the same city, knowing that you're going to play the Lakers as many times as the Clippers will, I guess. I don't know if the schedule's out. I don't think they've put out the schedule yet. That has to be Christmas Day, right?
Oh, no doubt.
Like, you have to do Lakers and Clippers. Like, that would be the most foolish thing in the world not to, but this is what you want. You want this elite level parity. I do think that you have a lot of other teams that have some hope because the talent is spread out and there's enough otherworldly level talent in this league right now to create that. I think for the first time, League Pass feels like a really good play. I think that even if you just do the five-team League Pass that they offer, then you can get both LA teams. You can get the Pelicans and see Zion. You can get a couple of maybe your squad. And one other, the West is absolutely loaded. I think the East is in pretty good shape as well. This is the first time in a long time that I mean, I love the NBA, and I don't even watch a lot of the regular season, but I'm actually going to be super excited to watch things this year. I think this makes it innumerably more interesting than it would have been had he just went to the Lakers and formed a super team. And I think that this is Kawhi's personality. This fits exactly who this guy is, or who we think he is. And that's the whole point, right? We don't really know who this guy is, but he just pulled off a great move, and nobody even knew Paul George was out there. And of course, Kawhi Leonard lands it.
Do you think the Clippers will win a championship?
A championship or this year?
A championship. With yes. Kawhi and Paul George on the team.
Yes.
You think it'll happen?
I do.
Would you make them the favorite this year?
Yes, slight. I think both LA teams are right there. And there are some other squads I like as well. A couple in the East. But if I had to predict it today, yeah, I think the Clippers being the favorites makes all the sense in the world. Slight favorite.
I think there's a good chance that we're going to see some really exciting stuff. And look, I've been critical of the NBA, but I think this is the best possible result. I'm kind of ecstatic. I mean, maybe it was partly being out in LA. You could feel the excitement surrounding where Kawhi was going to end up. And I think it is going to it's going to hit us in a big way once that season gets rolling.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.